Les colloques du Collège de France.
Donc, les collègues vont réapparaître dans les prochaines minutes et nous rejoindre. Donc nous commençons la partie anglophone notre session sur le droit, mais comme je vous l'ai dit, nous pourrons échanger dans toutes les langues. Et donc, tout d'abord, notre premier orateur, c'est Bernard Stolte. Il est professeur émérite d'histoire du droit à l'université de Groningen. Il est un spécialiste reconnu de droit byzantin et qu'il interroge notamment à travers une approche philologique. Il a notamment édité des textes de droit byzantin, plusieurs textes importants des sources du droit byzantin. Son intérêt pour la philologie se perçoit aussi dans ses travaux importants sur les codifications qui ont eu lieu dans l'Empire byzantin, ou encore sur toutes les questions, sur ses travaux sur les questions de la langue du droit, notamment. Et pour sa présentation aujourd'hui, il va nous parler du sujet suivant: Byzantine legal scholarship in the manuscripts of the Basilica. Around 30 minutes.
Merci bien. Je m'excuse pour parler en anglais, mais je n'ai eu le temps de faire une traduction. Alors, the past as paratext. Let me begin with a slight... what I consider as a joke. I gave, of course, permission for this to be recorded and transmitted later, as it now is the form everywhere. When I checked what I had given permission for, it was for a lecture on the past as a pretext. Now, pretext, as you may be aware, has more than one significance, than one meaning, but I really mean the past as paratext. In any case, Byzantine legal scholarship in the manuscript of the Basilica. This is the slide which I use always, and which represents everything you need to know to become a renowned scholar of Byzantine law. It's free for use by everybody. It would be nice if you acknowledge that our teaching in the University of Groningen of Byzantine law, because really we have a course in Byzantine law, uses this product of our educational tools. And this is classical Roman law. You heard Dario Mantovani speak about that. This is Justinian. And this is Byzantine law as it filtered down in various forms, hence the yellow arrows, into the Basilica. Here we are before Justinian. This is the 6th century. This is also the 6th century after the promulgation of the codification. And then here we are around 900 AD, I always say to my students. If you keep this in mind, it will be helpful to know about this. This is what we have in direct transmission of the yellow and red blocks. It's here in Paris, in the Sorbonne, and it is, whether you believe it or not, this is a commentary in Greek by a law professor, an antecessor, Stephanus, commenting on the digest. There are two pieces, you have Recto and Verso, and they have been identified as a commentary on the 19th book, second title of the Digest. I can illustrate the argument, but it takes time, and I don't have all the slides, and we don't have time to do them if I had them. And I move straight to a manuscript, also here in Paris, 1349, which dates to the 11th century and is an important witness of the Basilica. Now, I have a quote from the Prefatio of the one of the volumes of the Basilica, in which the Parisinus Crecus 1349 was introduced, and it is special because both the text and the scholia, as they originally were in scholia in Genoa, are handed down without being contaminated by any recent additions. If we go back to, no, all the way around. It therefore is this block, Stephanus Paragraphi, paratext avant la lettre, and it is unique in for several reasons. I've listed them in the next slide. It is a unique witness for one of the 60 books of the Basilica, and you have to remember that 16 books have, of these 60, have not been transmitted in direct form at all. And that you usually have only two manuscripts, sometimes one, mm-hmm. two, in an occasion, very rarely more, of the text of the Basilica. So if it is a Codex Unicus for a part, then that is already a mark of importance. But it has old or ancient scholia. Now, that term needs some clarification, I think, back to the... That means that if we are at the Basilica, the text has been provided by translations, commentaries, the various genres, all dating to the 6th century. So the Basilica is not an innovation. It is a ordering of the past. What you have to know is that in the immediate aftermath of the codification by Justinian, there was a massive language problem. It was a codification in Latin, and the majority of this population, of course, was Greek-speaking. So this had to be made accessible by help with the translations. And whatever happens in France, I don't know, you have a large area for your own language, so you usually have translations made for students in France because the booksellers are able to earn some money with them. I come from a country where this is not the case. That is not to say that there are not translations circulating of certain important books, but have never been commercially put on the market. So you have various versions of books informally distributed in student fraternities and elsewhere. And they all pretend to be a good and fair representation of the original, which they are, sometimes are, often are not. And the problem, of course, is that there are these all these various versions. Now, this is roughly comparable to Constantinople in the 6th century, with the important difference that the teachers, the law professors, the antecessores, provided these translations and other tools. Their courses, in short, were eternalized in the form of manuscripts. And these manuscripts were later on the contribution when composing the text of the Basilica. We'll come back to that. But to understand the text of the Basilica, there were these other means of understanding what was going on, which were popular to explain what the text of the new legislation was. And that is why these were added in the margin, never in one, let's say, authoritative version, but the single manuscripts were provided with marginal scholia, which also drew back on scholarship of the 6th century. We'll see some examples. So the Basilica, themselves being a help to understand an old legislation, were thought to profit from explanations also going back to the past. That is the main reason for giving the title of The Past as Paratext to this paper. These old and or ancient scholia, scholi antichi in Italian, are old in the sense that they existed before the Basilica. There were explanations of the digest, and when a digest fragment was incorporated into the Basilica, its explanation, originally written in the margin of a digest manuscript, was incorporated in the Basilica, either as Basilica text or as part of the scholia. But that has also another interesting phenomenon, and that is the Index Titulorum of books 45 to 50, short index of the manuscript Parisinus Fecus 1349, which is in the edition carries the siglum PC, hence IPC is not some chemical company or whatever. It is an Index Titulorum from the Parisinus Fecus 1349 on the first 6 pages dealing with the books 45 to 50. It has also the text of books 45 to 48, so not as far as the index went, but at least the major part of it. And then it has also the Index Reginae of the novel, but that is a separate entity. It's also, codicologically speaking, a separate entity in the book. But the text with the scholia and the Index Titulorum are all by the same hand. And the hand is, I rely on paleographical opinion, dated to the 11th century. So that is roughly 100 years plus after the promulgation of the Basilica.
The index, about which I will mainly speak, has been edited and studied, also edited by my younger colleague Tom van Bokhoven in the Subsessiva Groningana of 2009. It is a very interesting document because, and I anticipate the sort of conclusion that could be drawn, it's not so much an index or in term of a PINAX, a list of the titles. Yes, it is a list of the titles, but it is a list that predates the making of the actual basilica. It is a program of edition. Mm-hmm. It is a list of the titles of the digest and the code and some novels which were meant to go into the basilica. Mm-hmm. And there are several indications that support this assertion. The assertion is not new. It is first, I think, published by my predecessor on the chair, Herman Jan Scheltema, who has proposed to the following sequence of events. First, there was a selection of what parts of the corpus juris, mm-hmm. virtually all, were going into the basilica, but then precisely in what order and which contents of the old titles were going to be part of the basilica. So the index titulorum in this manuscript follows the order of the planned basilica with a list of titles, of the titles of which every single book would be composed. This is the first page of the manuscript, one recto, and it has the it is also the beginning of this index titulorum. It is a first page and therefore not very well readable, but the rest is much clearer, I can promise you. This is a detail of the beginning. The 45th book of the Basilica has six titles, Ege Titlus, and then a stigma as a number. And then Titlos Alpha, title one, Peri ton ex adiatetu cleronomon, on about the intestate heirs, on the heredes intestati. And then there is a reference. And it is a reference to the 38th book of the digest, sixth title. And the whole list is constructed like this. The planned name of the title in Greek, so in what it was going to be in the basilica, and then the reference to the digest or to the code or to a novel, in order to make clear where, which portion of the law was the source. It's what Tom van Bokhoven called source references, but he means with source the 6th century digest, code, and novels. But then there is also a after 38, title 6, something, and that if you are not immediately saying, oh, it's Kephalion Alpha, chapter 1. Now, this wouldn't be, it always begins with chapter 1, so that's not interesting. But then we have a second title coming from the same book of the digest, title 12, and then there's Kephalion 10. So why these jumps in the number? And these are the numbers they were receiving in the chapters of the Basilica. So, to follow this one step further, you must realize that first, one title of the digest was summarized in the Basilica for 9 chapters, and then was chapter 10 that began a new title. Mm-hmm. Slightly different subject, but it all belonged together under an umbrella of what the compilers of the Basilica thought would be the proper contents mm-hmm. of a book of the Basilica. I think it's also for the sake of time better to restrict ourselves to readable script and this is an example of partly the same but also something different. If you read this, it says Anairousa Adgnatica, not exactly a Greek word, but it's Latin, of course. Kai ta cognatica, kai tipusa tas, and so on and so forth. And then it says here Kephalion. Oh, sorry, Neera. 118. Ro iota eta. And then Kephalion eta, that means that it begins in the Basilica with chapter 8. Then you get the source of chapter 8 in the Basilica, chapter 8 and following, is this novel of Justinian. But not the entire novel, but the chapters in the Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta, Epsilon, Stigma, Zeta, Eta, 1 to 8. And at another place, we see on airs, Herhole Neera, the whole novel. In contrast to here, where only part of the novel was to be incorporated. Now, this is obviously full of it's the reader is directed to the past, to what we have, and he would know what the Basilica would comprise of the old legislation and also the old organization of the legislation, because the Basilica does not follow exactly the pattern familiar from the digest and the code, but it accepts, and this I think is not without significance, it accepts the structure in titles. The Byzantine law even has developed a notion, paratitlon, a title next to the title, which is what I talked about last Tuesday. By the way, the Anairousa presupposes a diataxis. The diataxis, a constitution, taking away the agnatic and cognatic rights. No, that make. Now, where are these titles coming from, or rather, where are these rubriques? Because that's what they are. They are rubrics. Where are they coming from? This is an entirely different case, but well illustrating the late sixth century capability of scholars or lawyers to understand Latin rubrics and translating them into Greek. This is a similar index, but then really the index of the book, as we understand it, of the first part of the so-called Collectio Tripartita. We had better look first at this. This is of the codex part. Tripartita means three parts, of course, codex, then the digest, and then the third part, the novels. Here we have a Latin reasonably scribed, written Latin rubric, and here we have the translation. There are very literal translations. The Latin begins with De Christianum Magnificum, Haereticus vel Paganus vel Judeus habet. So, other faiths, people of other faiths should not have a slave which is a who is a Christian. Perites Christianon, Andrapodon, it's almost word by word translation. Now, if you look at the critical apparatus of the edition of the Collectio Tripartita, I must plead guilty here, then you will see that we have selected one decent manuscript for reconstructing the title, but the other manuscripts have a terrible jumble of Latin or Latin script symbols. It is clear that Latin was not their specialty. Let me put it like that. And but the important implication is that these good Greek translations cannot have been made in the age of the manuscripts themselves. This is a 10th century manuscript, as far as I know, in any case, much later than the 6th century. And if you only had these jumbled this Latin symbols, you would not have been able to produce that translation. So the translations date already to the 6th century and have been handed down in the tradition of the Collectio Tripartita. If we go back, then this is the pinax of the edition of the Collectio Tripartita, and you see that they still had the Latin, the first few Latin words, deudes, ne Christianum, de his qui ad ecclesias, but then they're all beginnings of the sentence, and if you look in the actual text, you see how the full rubrica was. And even the abbreviated Greek renderings are made on the basis of the abbreviated Latin they do not do what would be logical in the other language. No, that they take the Latin rubrics as a model and make Latin and make a Greek equivalent of that. This is what we probably must envisage that happened in legal manuscripts generally. So of the titles of the digest, of the titles of the code, there must have been, will have been, I dare say, rubrics which had a version which was recognizable for people more or less familiar with Roman law. And the technical legal language of Roman law. And then would have made a translation in order to help the reader into Greek. But once the knowledge of Latin got less and less or virtually disappeared, then of course they were doing with the Greek. So what you would expect is for the Basilica a system of titles which could be traced directly to the Latin rubrics of the Corpus Juris. Yet this is not always the case. Mm-hmm. And I'll try to keep myself to the time schedule. Here there is a quotation from the preface, the proemium of the Prochiron, which is also roughly around 900. I'm not going into details. I wish to keep friends with everyone. Ton Romaicon Lexion, etc. We have transformed the composition of Latin words into the Greek language. The Emperor Basil claimed that he had done away with this complicated Greco-Latin hybrid language, which was the province of the lawyers. And it is visible, I must say, in the rubrics of the Basilica. Let me give an example. In the Basilica 48, title 20, the rubric of the title is Peri Eleftheru Pragmatos, on a free thing. That's weird. The rubric of the code, where the subject is title 16 of book 7, is De Liberali Causa. Now, it is clear what has happened. Without knowing the contents precisely, there has been a translation, more or less literally. And De Liberali Causa makes sense to Roman lawyers who know what is the subject. But Peri Eleftheru Pragmatos, I think, will not directly speak to the minds of the Greek lawyers. But help was at hand. And here, surprisingly, we have two sources which illustrate what I'm speaking about. The first is a scholion at the text of this title in the Basilica, which steers you to book 7, title 16 of the digest, and Kephalion Alpha is again the first chapter, the beginning of a title. But then we have this index, the programmatic index, and it does not speak about elefteron pragma. It speaks about peritropon elefterias kai eugeneas kai perikatastatikon hypotesion. Now, that's much clearer for a Greek speaker on ways of freedom, being freeborn, and on cases which have to do with the status libertatis. So here we see that a rubric de liberali causa was probably for the composer of the programmatic index not clear enough, and therefore he must have resorted to the content of that title and devised a rubric which was an acceptable alternative for the rubric which was just a literal translation of a rubric that made only sense if you already knew what it all was about. Another is in the same region. The rubric in the code is De Adsertione Tollenda. Now, on the taking away of an adsertio, it is only comprehensible if you know what the assertio means here. And it is, again, a case on status of liberty or slavery. Therefore, again, in the Basilica, originally the programmatic index had peri elefteru dotento superdulu di casastai. That is not particularly clear either, but at least better than what the code had as a rubric. And in the text itself, it has become an abbreviated version of what we read in the programmatic index. Literally, on a free man that has been given in defense of a slave. And then dikaza stai did. I'm not going into details, that there's no time, and this is probably not the audience that is particularly interested in the particularities of the case, but you see what I mean. Then, in book 7.19, the rubric is De Ordine Cognitionum. And that has got the perfectly acceptable translation, Peritaxios Diagnosion. That is a literal rendering of the Latin. And what is meant is that if there is a case on matters of freedom or slavery, and there's another case where it plays a role, then there are rules which case should be decided first before the final judgment can be given in the other case. And this is what is in the programmatic index, peritu ei sympesai toi katastatikoi, kai heteron zeta, about what happens if in proceedings about status there is a case and what then first has to be decided. So there are two cases, which case has precedence? And then the reference to the corpus juris. Well, here you have, just to prove that I haven't thought this up out of the blue, this is page the folio 200 recto titlos and so on. peritaxios diagnosio. So, well, what we have here is the situation that we have a programmatic index when the basilica still had to be made, and then we have the actual basilica, and that did not follow this programmatic index. There's another Paris manuscript, Coigelinianus, where we also have one of these indexes that started life as a programmatic index, and that they bear out what I'm speaking about. Oh, skip this. Now, what should we deduce from all this? One is that we have to go back to the time when the scribe of the Parisinus 1349 was working. He had this programmatic index, which he copied, and he had the text of the basilica itself, which he also copied. What he did not do is relating the two. Because we see, I've shown you a case where he had a rubric which was different, or few cases where the rubric in the programmatic index is different and mostly clearer than what it actually became in the basilica. So didn't he think, or was he confident that the two were the same? Because many times they were exactly the same. In any case, it is, in my view, clear that he will have thought that he just had an index which was useful to have, or perhaps his patron wanted to have, and the actual text of it was in the Pinax, in this index. But it is also clear that he did not realize these Kephalion alpha, Kephalion whatever, these numbers, which is strange on one hand, because he must have had a model in which there were also numbers of the basilica. But this is what he has done, and these are the facts we have to deal with. It is also clear that if he wanted to have a Pinax for his manuscript, that he may have mistaken the identity of this programmatic index. But after all, for 90%, it represents what it finally became. And we see that that he misunderstood the chapter numbers, because they tended to wander around. Sometimes you see them in the middle of a source reference, sometimes at the end, and sometimes they're lacking altogether. So in the century, roughly a century to a century and a half, that must have separated the promulgation of the basilica and the production of Paris 1349, there was already an amount of confusion, and apparently no way of using the Latin originals of the rubrics for Greek equivalents. But apparently, also little access, availability of the original Greek translations. So, and that's what I'm going to conclude on.
Briefly.
We have a strange case of paratext. We have here a paratext avant la lettre. The paratext existed before the text was actually written. Then by mistake or just as a natural way of things, became an index titulorum, like there are many more. The title, the division in titles, after all, is the backbone of a legal normative text. There was some back and forth in the chapter numbers. And the title index went its own way. The programmatic index got enriched with the chapter numbers of the Basilica. And the old scholia, and that's the last example I can give. It won't work, and I'm out of my time. The substitute for not comprehending what was going on and is adding scholia, which all are fragments of the 6th century scholarship. They had rightly the idea that that would be the fount of knowledge to understand the text of the Basilica. But the text they adopted for these scholia, as old scholia, is full of Latinisms, Latin technical legal terms, which were Latin rather than Greek. And that was the past as paratext, but not, I think, the wisest move. But that's a totally anachronistic judgment. So let's just see whether we can create order and chaos here. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.